Yeah, so we're very happy to welcome Nico Brodman from UCL to give this seminar. It's actually quite funny that Nico gave the last in-person seminar at PI, and now he's giving the first basically exactly 2 years later. Yeah, so Nico, he did his PhD in Arpin with Barbara Tahal, and then following that, he's been a postdoc at UCL, and he's done lots of interesting work on quantum codes and also condensed matter. So please take it away, Nico.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mike. I'm glad to be back. As Mike said, I gave a presentation here 2 years ago, pretty much exactly 2 years ago, and then we got like rudely interrupted by the pandemic. And last time I was here, I was talking about how to build LDPC quantum codes, making use of symmetries. And I kind of stay with this theme in some sense, because the work I'm talking about today, first of all, I should kind of give you the archive number before I forget. So this is on the archive. It's 22.02.066.47, and this is joint work with Simon Burton. Yeah, and as I said, this kind of, I know, extends this theme a little bit of symmetries in LDPC quantum codes. And like the overarching motto is essentially we use symmetries to implement fault-tolerant gates in quantum codes. Yeah, so this is kind of the overall idea. And so this is doesn't come out of nowhere. This kind of is motivated by like recent interest in so-called LDPC quantum codes. These are codes which have a high rate and high distance, which give up on other properties such as locality. And there are a few ways, let's say like few general approaches. To manipulate quantum information. Stored in a quantum code. For tolerantly. And I want to highlight two of those. So the first is in a work by Gottesman. And this is based on a state teleportation scheme. And just giving you the archive number. (29.84). And in this work, Gottesman shows that it is possible to perform fault-tolerant quantum computation using LDPC codes such that the overhead is constant. Yeah? So regardless of how big you make your computation, the penalty in terms of overhead that you have to pay to make to kind of account for or to correct for errors is only a constant. And very recently, there has been nice work by Cohen et al. And they essentially generalize a concept from surface codes, so-called lattice surgery. To arbitrary LDPC quantum codes. Yeah, so now you can kind of use these techniques to manipulate the information which is encoded in these high rate codes. And again, archive number, so you can look this up. Okay. However, the drawback of both of these approaches, I would say, is that there still is a large constant overhead involved. Yeah, so in this scheme, you have to essentially kind of keep around copies of these LDPC codes. And in this scheme, you have to have a rather large ancillary state that you need to kind of, I know, use to manipulate your information. And none of this, so neither of these approaches is ideal, I would say. And I think there is an ideal notion of a four-torrent gate, and that's called a transversal gate. So ideal four-torrent construction. And this is transversal. And these are simply sort of as follows. So we just apply a depth one circuit of consisting of one or two qubit gates. Here can't doesn't move. Okay. And we also allow a relabeling of qubits. Yeah, so there's also like qubit permutations allowed. And it's rather obvious why this would be four-torrent. So let's say we have, I know, some circuit consisting of one or two qubit gates. Yeah, and let's say some error happens somewhere. Yeah, and this error can only spread, yeah, by a constant amount. Yeah, so in particular, this kind of avoids this problem of kind of, I know, error spreading uncontrolled in the circuit. Yeah, and in addition to that, it's also very efficient in terms of time. Yeah, you just kind of, I know, have to kind of apply like a single round of physical unitary gates, and yeah, rather than kind of, I know, doing anything more complicated. Okay, so again, let me kind of give you like some little idea of how we do this. So I will show you how to use symmetries of quantum codes. And turn these into transversal logical gates. And we call these gates that we obtain in this way, we call them fold transversal. Transversal gates. And the reason for this name essentially comes from some previous work. So there's a well-known relation between color codes and surface codes. Yeah, and there's a mapping that's called unfolding, which is due to Kubica, Ostavsky, and Yoshida. Sorry about that. Oh, I broke the mic. Let me fix this real quick, sorry. Okay, I hope everybody can still hear me. Okay, NJP 1.5. And there's a mapping back due to Musa. Uh, which is called, oh, this is called folding. And this is from 2016. And yeah, why is this relevant? So first of all, color codes are kind of known or kind of constructed because they have very nice properties in terms of transversal gates. Yeah, and essentially this folding and unfolding approach kind of relates these transversal gates between these codes. And in some sense, our work is a generalization of this folding approach to essentially arbitrary codes, not only surface codes. So let me kind of give you the rough idea behind Musa's construction. So let's say we have a surface code. So bear with me while I draw this. And let's say we have our checks. Like this. So let's say these are our x checks. So this checks x operators, and these are our z checks. Then what Musa does is, let me just draw it in another color. He shows that taking this diagonal, yeah, and let's say this are z checks here. Yeah, there's a relation between the x checks in this half and the z checks in this half, and yeah, by kind of folding up this code in this way, we can obtain or we can perform local operations, yeah, on the qubits which are now lying on top of each other, and these will implement a transversal logical gate on this code if we can fold it up. And I will not go into the details of how this exactly works, because this will kind of become clearer as we go along. Okay. So before I can talk about these details, let me kind of fix some notation. So first of all, let's talk about a large class of codes, so-called CSS codes. So these are stabilizer codes. With checks acting as poly X or poly Z exclusively. And of course, there's a condition. And this condition is if you want to gain any information about errors that happened in these codes, then like the check operators better commute. Yeah, so we get some exact outcome. And that's a nice way of kind of drawing this, like writing this condition. This is essentially writing down two matrices, Hx and Hz. And these are binary matrices such that each row in Hx contains the supports of the x checks. Yeah, so each row is a check, and each row essentially contains a support. So since poly x operators and poly z operators anti-commute, what this essentially encodes is that all checks have a mutual they share an even overlap. And thereby, all these checks will commute. And yeah, so there's like different ways of thinking about CSS codes, and I will just kind of talk about two of them. The first way is talking about homology. And And this describes these matrices in terms of another object, which is loaned from algebraic topology. And this is what's called a chain complex. And it's very important that this is a base chain complex. So we always kind of, I know, have like some distinguished bases. And in this language, we can write this code as follows. So we have the field with two elements, so just the binary field. And this I would call the Z-check space. And then there's a mapping, which is generated by or given by this matrix. Again, everything is kind of based, so this makes sense. And then we have our space of the supports of the qubit. And we have our X checks. Yeah. And there can be more spaces along here. And the reason why this kind of final crops up in terms of algebraic topology is because we can think of these as boundary operators. So if you're already familiar with algebraic topology, then you might have already seen this. So you can think of these as boundary operators going along. And this is a nice perspective because it essentially kind of gives you a way of constructing CSS code. So as soon as you have a chain complex which is based, you can always kind of define the quantum code from this. And so for example, like the main example is the toric code, where we have a torus, right, with faces. Yeah, and these faces give us our z-checks. They map into qubits, which are our edges. And this maps into vertices, which are our x-checks. Yeah? So this is how you should kind of think about this. And again, there might be like higher chains or like lower chains. And these essentially kind of give us linear dependencies between the checks. OK, so in this language, we can also talk about a dual of the CSS code. And I will write the code usually as some C, and then the dual code is CT. And this is just the same chain complex in reverse. Yeah. So note how we have just kind of switched the X and the Zs. And we call something a self-dual CSS code. If the code is just its own dual. Yeah? So if these kind of chain complexes are just the same. OK, any questions so far? So don't worry if you're not like too familiar with these the cohomological description. It's just a convenient notation for what comes later. There's another way of looking at this, which maybe is a bit more intuitive. And that's the Tanner graph. Or the poset diagram. And that's essentially a pictorial representation of this chain complex. So we can draw like a three-layer diagram where these are our x-checks. These are our qubits, so these circles. And then we have these are z-checks, and these are x-checks. Yeah. And if a qubit is in the support of a specific x-check, we draw an edge. Yeah, so there might be more here. OK, I won't bother kind of drawing a perfect example. But the important thing is that you can kind of see that the checks commute by kind of looking at two, like an X, a z-check and an x-check, and then seeing that their neighborhood essentially contains an even number of qubits. It's like a different like pictorial way of looking at these codes. Okay, so now we have two different ways of looking at quantum codes. So now let's see whether we can understand the symmetries of these codes. So first of all, in the homological description, let's write down an arbitrary CSS code, and I will kind of forget about these like linear dependencies. So I'll only write like the length 3 chain complex, which is the one which defines the code itself. X, then we land in the space of X checks. Yeah, and let's say there's another code for now, T tilde, which also has some Z checks, but some different parity check matrix. Yeah, but the same number of qubits and the same number of checks, essentially. Yeah, and let's say there are mappings between them. So again, these are base chain complexes. So there's the mapping which is given by permutation matrices. There are 3 of them. Yeah, so 3 permutation matrices, sigma z, sigma n, and sigma x. So this permutes the checks, and this permutes the qubits. And we're interested in 2 specific cases. Namely, first of all, when c tilde is equal to c. Yeah, and we call these the automorphisms. Or odd C. And the other case is when C tilde is equal to the dual. And this we call ZX dualities. ZX dualities or DZX. Okay. So to give like a like a very simple example, we can look at the toric code.
Nico?
Yeah.
What's sigma z? Like, what are those arrows that you pointed from c?
Oh, okay. So these are just mappings, yeah, between these like 2 chain complexes, and these are permutation matrices, yeah, because we can just think of matrices since everything has a base in here, and these diagrams. Like it doesn't matter. Like if you can, I know, kind of trace out some mapping, then it doesn't matter like which direction you go. This is called like a commutative diagram.
Oh.
Yeah. But this, none of this is very important. It's just like to kind of, I know, kind of set up notation and yeah, give some intuition of how this works. Any other questions so far? Okay. So just to give like a quick example of what these could look like in a code that you're familiar with. So in the toric code, very simple automorphism. It's essentially a translation from, let's say, one point to another. Yeah. So everything gets translated just by like this diagonal shift. So this is an automorphism. Let me try to find some more chalk. And an example of ZX duality is if you do like a half translation, yeah? So that this vertex now becomes this face, and this face becomes this vertex, and so on. Yeah, so this is like a kind of like a trivial example of this. Okay. So now it's, it turns out that one can kind of prove like a neat lemma, and that is if a code allows for ZX dualities, then the number of ZX dualities, so DZX, is exactly equal to the number of automorphisms of the code. Yeah, and this is kind of nice because usually we control the automorphisms quite well, so we we also control the ZX dualities. So for example, again, in the Tori code, you can kind of see this in the following way. So what are the number of symmetries that the Tori code has? So we can just look at a single face, yeah? And it doesn't matter if there's more Tori code around here. But the important thing is there's like lines of symmetry. Yeah, and these are these. Yeah, and we have like all these lines of symmetry for each face. So all in all, and we have this like for every face, and we can kind of essentially map all of these little fundamental domains, yeah, all of these like, I don't know, little triangles to any other triangle, and this constitutes a symmetry. So all in all, so there's 8 per face, and there's L squared faces. So this is the number of automorphisms of the Tori code. Yeah. Okay, how am I doing with time? Great. Okay, so this brings me to the fold transversal case. Okay, so let's take some ZX duality of some code. And yeah, we call a unitary operator. We call it fold transversal. When the operator is a tensor product, if it is a tensor product, of single.
Can I ask a question?
Oh yeah, of course.
Actually, what are
DZX? Sorry, what is? This is a set of ZX dualities. So every ZX duality. The set of these ZX dualities, so things which, so these are like these symmetries, which take your CSS code, like this probably poster diagram, like with Z checks and qubits and X checks, and it just kind of flips it and does some permutation on your, yeah. And
what is automorphism? Is it
automorphism is everything. So okay, so you can think of this as a ZX duality. Flips the levels of this poster diagram, but an automorphism leaves the levels invariant, like it doesn't flip X and Z checks. Yeah, so this is something which kind of just leaves the code itself invariant, yeah, but just does some permutation on your qubits.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the difference. And note that the ZX dualities, so this is a group, like the automorphism group, but ZX dualities don't form a group because they don't have the identity in it. Okay. All right. So so we call a unitary operator for transversal if it's a product of single or two qubit gates supported on the orbits. So this is I. Tau I for I from 1 till n, yeah? So we look at the orbits of the qubits under the ZX duality, and we call it fold transversal if it's just a transversal circuit supported on these orbits. Is this clear, or?
Wait, can you explain the orbits?
Oh yeah, so, let's kind of do the Musa's construction. This is like a surface code, yeah? And there is a ZX duality, we draw it in a different color, which is this diagonal, yeah, which flips this part of the surface code into this part of the surface code. Or like, I don't know, it kind of flips between these two parts. And let's say that we have some like that check here, and we have an X check here, yeah? Then it flips the X check onto a Z check and vice versa, yeah? And let's say there's a qubit like on the fold itself, yeah? Then this is invariant, yeah? So we can apply a single qubit unitary here. But let's say there's a qubit here and a qubit here, and these are mapped onto one another, yeah? So they form like one orbit. Yeah, so then we apply like some two qubit gate between them. And I will kind of give you like more examples in a minute.
So are the two qubit gates being applied on the two qubits that end up falling onto each other when you fold?
Yes, yeah. I mean, not necessarily, so it doesn't have to be like a two qubit gate. Like the condition is like the orbits essentially give a partition of your codes, yeah? And we only allow to kind of perform operations on these partitions. That's the idea. Okay. Any more questions? Okay. All right. So let me give you the two examples of four-transistor gates that we construct. So first, we call a Hadamard type. And this is defined as follows. So we take some ZX duality, and we obtain a gate, or define a gate called H tau. And this is simply a tensor product so I will explain this in a minute. Let me just write off some swap gates and then some Hadamards. Yeah. So we just apply Hadamards transversally on each qubit, and then we apply these swaps. So why do we do this? So first of all, if we just like if you ignore this part, then this would only work with a self-dual CSS code. Yeah. So for example, the Steen code is a nice example where the X and the Z checks have the same supports. Yeah. So there this would be allowed. So we can just, in some sense, the poster diagram is just symmetric. So we can just kind of do Hadamards, and the Hadamards exchange the X and the Z checks, and we obtain the same code back. And yeah, by obtaining the same code back, we have shown that this is like a transistor gate, so it will preserve the code space. However, this is not necessarily a general property of quantum codes. Yeah, so what you might have to do is maybe you can kind of switch the two sides, but then you have to do some permutations. So this is, for example, the case for the toric code. You know, if we look at I don't know. If you turn any X check around the vertex into a Z check, this is not the same code anymore. But what we have to do is essentially we can kind of, I know, permute things in a controlled way, and then we obtain the same code back. Okay, is this kind of clear, or was it too fast? So again, the main idea is what we want to do is we want to map our code, yeah. So that we obtain the same code in the end, yeah, but the mapping itself is non-trivial, yeah, and this will then kind of, I know, induce a mapping on the logical space. Okay. Maybe another way of thinking about this is you can think of the stabilizer group, yeah, which defines our code, and now we perform a mapping of our stabilizer group, and what we get is we fix the stabilizer group as a whole, yeah, but we don't fix it pointwise, yeah. So we do something non-trivial, and this will have an action on the normalizer of the stabilizer group. So this will kind of then map the logical operators. That's like another way of saying the same thing.
I'm not sure if I can follow. So
okay.
In case of the toric code, if I just shift, you know, diagonal direction by tiny bit, then that exchanges X.
Yeah.
It's an example of the ZX, or
So for the toric code, what you would have to do is essentially you would have to kind of you'd have to do the Hadamard and then kind of go to the dual lattice, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of gives you the same code back.
Yeah. This language of DZX is this. So it's okay. This kind of transformation is in DZX.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. So DZX is essentially what kind of I know. So this is essentially what kind of I know gets you back into the same code.
Yeah. So I just try to understand the equation. So,
mm-hmm.
So I goes to from one to n.
So we take our ZX duality down.
So you're thinking about the orbit. So it's like I apply. So let's say tau is this tiny shift. Then
mm-hmm.
I should think about like orbit of tau.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it's more than just a tiny shift, right? It's kind of taking this vertex
mm-hmm.
and mapping this vertex onto this face.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing as going to the dual lattice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the.
Yeah, so that's tau, and then so I apply swap on what and what?
On each qubit, yeah,
mm-hmm.
and its partner given by tau, yeah. So that would be like I don't know. Do you take like this edge, and you can kind of swap it with this edge,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So we get like this part of the face.
So
maybe let me just have draw the dual.
N is a number of total qubits?
N is the labels of the qubits.
Okay, so first I apply Hadamard every year and
uh-huh.
apply swap.
Right, and what this does is, let's say, like this qubit here on the primal lattice, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of shifted onto this qubit on the dual lattice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is what kind of I know, like for the toric code, it does like the primal dual thing, yeah. Then you kind of get the same code back, but it's more general than that. Like it works for like an.
So by doing this swap, I can do that.
Exactly. Yeah. You kind of. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I should kind of warn you. So this is called Hadamard type for a reason. So first of all, so in general, it does not map between different logicals in the way you might expect. So let's say we have some logical basis. Yeah, it doesn't just kind of no interchange like the ith logical x with the ith logical z. Since it just, I mean, like this I know, dependent on like how we choose our logical basis, yeah. So there's no reason why this should happen, yeah. And secondly, it's not even true that this is the case. Yeah, just because this ZX duality might not be idempotent, like self-inverse. Okay.
This swap operator, do they commute with each other?
Yeah, I mean, they don't share any supports, right? So
they don't share? So then I'm not so sure.
Because that's like tau is just like some permutation on your qubits.
So I'm not sure if I... So I know that way you are doing in the end is just a shift, but I don't think I still understand how.
Okay, so in the shift, yeah, you also kind of pair up qubits, right? Like there's no two qubits which are kind of mapped onto each other. So
if I want to shift everything, it needs to go in one direction, right?
So
it's
commuting. But it's for the toric code, so it's like periodic.
Sorry.
It's for the toric code, so there's like periodic boundary conditions. Is that what you're worried about? Or?
Oh, no, I just, maybe something very elementary. I need to move every qubit into one direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
45 degree.
Yeah.
And then, how do you do that with the swap operators?
Because
I swap them, one of them go forward and the other one go upward, so I just don't know how to.
Oh no! Okay, I see what you mean. I didn't work out this example with the toric chord because this is like a boring example in the end. So what happens? Okay, given that I don't have much time, maybe let me get back to you afterwards. But I mean, it does work out in the end. Let me kind of just think about this and then I can get back to you. Okay. Since I'm kind of short on time. Just very quickly, kind of gloss over the phase type gate. And there, I will kind of final say, okay, like given as suitable. And I won't write down. I don't have the time to kind of write down what suitable means. Select quality. Then we have another logical gate, and this is called S tau. And this is a tensor product, first of all, between those which are being fixed, and where we apply a phase gate, maybe with some dagger, and for those which are non-fixed. And then we apply a CZ between I and tau I. Yeah, so here the fixed qubits, we apply an S gate, and the free orbits where we have like two elements, and this is like one of these conditions is that like only one of these two cases can occur. We apply a CZ. And I hope you believe me when I say that. The same. This is actually a transistor gate, so this kind of preserves the code itself again. Yeah, so it preserves the stabilizer group, but it has some non-trivial action on the logical space. Okay, in the last 50 minutes, let me very briefly go through like one example that we look at in our paper. So first of all, I should say, so this is like why I haven't really thought about Dini's question, is that the toric code only encodes two qubits. So if we look at these gates that we can obtain, then we can kind of now do some Clifford's on two qubits, but that's kind of boring. So we look at a code which encodes a few more qubits. And this I will call Brink's code. And the whole reasoning behind kind of using this example is what we want to do is we want to try some code with some large automorphism group. And many logical qubits. So a good test candidate are hyperbolic codes. And the particular one that we chose is Brink's code. There's many different ways of thinking about this. So first of all, this is a projective curve. Defined by some equations. 1 to 5, xi to the m equals 0 for m equal 1, 2, and 3. Yeah, so this is why mathematicians have considered this curve in the past, because it has like this very nice algebraic description. And it's also very symmetric. So you can see that this is invariant under complete permutations of the five coordinates. So the symmetry group is in fact S5. And if we kind of derive a code very similar to how we can derive the toric code from the torus. Yeah, then we get that this is S5. And there's a nice way of visualizing this code. And thanks to Mike for this prop. So here I can finally show an icosahedron. And in fact, you can think of the edges as the qubits, just as in the toric code. And the vertices are also the x-checks as in the toric code. But then the z-checks are actually these pentagons, which are like kind of now lying inside of here. Yeah, so here there would be like one z-check. Yeah, and I don't know, you can rotate this around, but it's symmetric, so this would be another z-check. Yeah, so this is the code we are thinking about. And so this has n equals 30 physical qubits. And there are 12 vertices, and each vertex kind of I know corresponds to like also like one of these like pentagonal faces. So we get k is equal to 30 minus 12 minus 12, but then there's also like some linear dependencies, the same as for the toric code. So we obtain 8 encoded qubits.
So yeah. You're doing
this. Yeah, but the thing is, this is like the so the actual shape I don't have, yeah. But this is like the convex hull of this shape. So the vertices and the edges are exactly the same, mm-hmm. But then the faces are actually these pentagons.
Oh, only pentagons.
Only the pentagons, yeah, and they kind of now all intersect. I should also say there's like a nice way of kind of looking at the bases. So let me kind of try to find it. So you can actually immerse a cube in this. So you can take, I don't know, like this, and this, and this. Yeah. Okay. So like if you look at where my fingers are, this is like where your logical qubits are, like your logical z's. So it's like this triangle is a logical z, and this is a logical z, and so on. Yeah. So there's like some kind of a nice cubic symmetry acting on your logical z's, and the logical X's are essentially, this is actually a self-dual code in the same sense that the toric code is self-dual, not in the like strong CSS sense. Okay. Another thing I can say is, okay, we have these 12 faces, and we have already seen. Here I kind of showed you how we can obtain the number of automorphisms. So we have 12 faces. Each has, these faces have 5 sides. So there's like 10 symmetries, so it's like the dihedral group, D5 or D10. And there's 12 of them, so we have 120. And 120 is exactly the order of S5. So I didn't lie to you, so this kind of checks out. Okay. Okay, so let me just kind of give you the gates on this code that we can obtain. So first of all, they are very simple ones, permutation gates. And these are induced by this automorphism group itself. So let me kind of fix some notation because I don't want to write down poly operators. So we can use that generally the poly group, but I will kind of now specifically care about the logical poly group. If I factor out the phases, then this is isomorphic to a symplectic space, which is just the symplectic space given from the homology and the cohomology. If you're not familiar with this, then don't worry, but just kind of now mention this. But what's more important is that the logical Clifford group modulo the logical poly group is the symplectic group, 2k f2. So now, looking at the representation of the automorphism group on the homology or on the logical operators, yeah, so you can think of these as like the supports of your z logical operators and the x logical operators, and like by performing some automorphism, yeah, just kind of rotating this around, we map on the different logical operators. And note that we map in like a complicated way. So if we look at, let's say, this logical z operator, and we do like a very simple rotation, then this rotation doesn't preserve the basis. Yeah, this will become, I know, essentially map this logical z operator onto like a superposition or like a product of other logical z operators. Yeah, so just because like the actual action is kind of like very trivial, we just kind of rotate around. Like the action on the homology is actually quite complicated. Just to kind of give you some intuition that, like, I don't know, there's more complicated stuff happening. So if you look at this representation into the general linear group of H1 plus H1, this representation is actually faithful. Yeah, so first we obtain like already quite large subgroup of the full Clifford group in the end. Okay, so now let's extend this with our four transversal gates. So let me also say that, I mean, these gates are pretty cheap. It's just like relabeling our qubits, or kind of, I know, rechoosing our basis. So we don't even have to do anything. So now let's fix some tau zero, which is some ZX duality. And again, I can kind of show you what this looks like. So look at this like zigzag of qubits, yeah, around this equator. Yeah, this is essentially the qubits which are stabilized by the ZX duality. And it kind of maps like these other qubits onto the ones on the like the northern hemisphere onto the southern hemisphere. Yeah, but in a somewhat complicated way. Like it's not like directly that this one is mapped onto this one or something like this. So this is our tau zero. Then by choosing our basis, so this is like chosen in a nice way because it kind of fits nicely with our basis. So now our H tau in this basis actually does do the thing that I said in general it wouldn't do. It just maps our symplectic pairs of logical operators onto one another. And our S tau, sorry, I should maybe say, okay, so this is like our, let's say these are like the X logicals and these are the Z logicals. Yeah, so it just kind of switches the two sides. And the S gate also does what it's supposed to do. So it just maps, it just leaves our Z's invariant. So we just kind of, I know, get our Z logicals back, and our X logical gets mapped onto, so XI gets mapped onto XI. Zi, where I should maybe look at equivalence classes because I don't care about phases. Yeah. So now, let me just kind of, I know, real quickly say like one more thing. So first of all, the group generated by these automorphisms, like these representations on our homology, plus these two guys, then generates the group sp8f2. So we don't get the full like SP16, like which would give us like the full Clifford group, but we get half of this. We can extend this to the full Clifford group by just adding like a single entangling gate, and that we can do by essentially kind of performing like a different like some lattice surgery. So we can perform Dehn twists, which are essentially kind of doing some lattice deformation, or we can use this this work by Cohen et al. And kind of use like an ancillary surface code, and then we obtain the full group. Or alternatively, we can just say, okay, we can live with four qubits, And we just use, we just kind of ignore the other qubits and just use the full Clifford group on these guys. Okay, so this is just one example I've shown you. But we also have like other examples. So we apply this to hypergraph products, balanced products, to some block codes. So this is like a very general approach to finding transversal gates in arbitrary CSS codes. And yeah, in a lot of these cases, we can actually kind of recover the full, or like, I know, like large part of the Clifford group, and then obtain the full Clifford group by adding like a single entangling gate. Okay, so let me conclude. So, conclusion. So, first of all, we've seen a method to implement transversal gates in arbitrary but sufficiently symmetric CSS codes. The nice thing about this is there's no overhead in qubits in time. Okay. And then in terms of future work, so first of all, like with the methods that we describe in our paper, you can always kind of just go like on a case-by-case basis, and you can always kind of retrieve like I know the gates and then look at what groups they generate. But it would be nice to have like more analytic control, so better control over the generated group by these logic operations. Yeah, so it would be nice to, for example, to kind of say, okay, we have like this family of phoneme codes, and we can obtain either like the full Clifford group or like this fraction of the full Clifford group. And also extensions to non-Clifford gates. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Nico, for a fantastic talk. Do we have any questions?
Is it possible to generalize this idea to say is the subsystem code?
Oh yeah, that would be interesting. So we don't do this explicitly. I do expect it to go through, but I don't know, we just haven't done it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this would be an interesting follow-up work, yes.
I see. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Does this fold transversal gate, do they form a group, or?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can just kind of annotate like all these fold transversal gates.
It involves two qubit gates, so I'm not wasn't so sure.
So it's just like so. Maybe I'm confused. So you just kind of get like some unitary operators, right?
Yeah.
You can just look at the group that they generate, right?
Does this preserve this property that it's?
No. In general, the product of four transversal gates will not be four transversal.
It could be bigger.
Yes. It could be bigger, yeah. But I mean, I'm not too worried about this. Like, I mean, you can just kind of do like rounds of error correction between those, right? So, yeah. And particularly, I mean, you might kind of choose like different ZX dualities, and then they will have like incompatible partitions of your qubits. So, yeah. So their composition won't be all transversal in any sense.
Okay.
maybe coming back to your earlier question. So maybe thinking about this shift was not a good idea. So another maybe a better ZX duality is like the one which, oh, maybe I shouldn't have drawn this torus. I should have drawn this torus. And another ZX duality would be like, I know, the one which kind of, I know, just exchanges sides. Yeah, maybe that's like an easier thing to think about, right? Because then it's kind of clear that, you know, maybe there's like, I know.
Sure.
Yeah. Then it's just like exactly the Musa construction.
Okay, any more questions? Maybe one from me. So the extensions are non-Clifford gates. I guess there's some like 3D hyperbolic lattices you consider and have some sort of Toyko definitions on these, but do you think the definitions would follow through, but now you're kind of, I mean, it's going to get more complicated, but you have something like an XZZ duality?
That's a very good question. I think the idea is that you have like some kind of like higher order symmetry, so not something like ZX, which kind of, I know, just exchanges sides. And by kind of exploiting that, it might be possible to get something which is non-Clifford, but let's see.
related, I don't know. So we need some space with good symmetries, I guess.
Sorry, second.
We need a lattice graph with good symmetries.
Yeah.
So like, then can I use it for like high 2D hyperbolic negatively curved space time? Probably. But these have also nice symmetries.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, this like Brinks is like one example of this, right? It's like a hyperbolic surface. I mean, it doesn't look like it because it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't curve. It's not nicely produced, but.
LDPC code or like negatively curved hyperbolic space, and then they try to put lots of qubits.
Yeah.
Qubits. I just wonder. It has lots of nice.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yes. So these are like very nice candidates, and this is actually like also why we kind of now looked at the Brinks code first, because these type of codes have like very like large symmetry groups, and like by having large symmetry groups, there's also like lots of ZX dualities you can kind of explore. So yeah, they're like a nice like testing ground. But again, so I mean, you can also look at these like more, I don't know, like modern like product constructions. Mm-hmm. And this is also what we do. We do look at like a balanced product of two very symmetric classical codes and retain some of the symmetries. And these again kind of give rise to ZX dualities and then therefore give rise to like these transversal gates. So it doesn't really require a space or anything. It's really just the symmetry group of this poset diagram.
Okay.